people were healing without the use of drugs or surgery. And so someone's taken away your business, you're going to try and launch some kind of campaign. However, the way they were going about it was not morally and ethically, what you might say, sound.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. This one is fun because we sit down with a chiropractor. I know several chiropractors, and I like this conversation because I really love people that are working hard to kind of address misconceptions that people have or recognize false beliefs and kind of work to address those and reframe those beliefs. And I feel like that is one thing that Dr. Brandon Buttrey is doing really, really well with their chiropractic practice. They're so passionate about educating people. And the chiropractic industry, like we talk about in this episode, is one that there's just been a lot of misinformation and confusion about. So we dive into not just Brandon's story, but the story of chiropractic as a whole, and really talk about some of those things around what do we do when we've been fed misinformation. So this is a really interesting and intriguing conversation with Dr. Brandon Buttrey. I think that you will love it. So let's go ahead and dive right in. Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the podcast designed for business owners, marketers, and entrepreneurs wanting to make an impact through the work that they do. I'm your host, Seth Silvers, and my passion is building brands that last by marketing with stories. On this podcast, we share stories with you of people who are growing their businesses the right way, and we teach you how to grow what you're doing through storytelling and authentic marketing. Let's get started. Everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. Today, I have the opportunity of interviewing a good friend, Dr. Brandon Buttrey. How are you doing today, Brandon?
Doing quite well. Thanks for having me on, Seth.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about this because Brandon is a chiropractor. Him and his wife both are. And over the last, I'd say, 5 years, as I've gotten more into marketing with stories and really finding authentic companies that are truly changing people's lives. Time and time again, I feel like that journey of finding purpose-driven businesses has taken me into the health industry and kind of into more natural health means that maybe have cultural stigmas or misunderstandings or whatnot. And so I would just say I've learned a ton over the last handful of years, where my path has kind of taken me down some unexpected directions. So I'm excited for today for our listeners to just get to learn more. So Dr. Brandon, could you just give us some context for kind of who you are and what you do and where you live and all that kind of stuff?
So our clinic is called One Health Chiropractic. We're located in Fort Collins, Colorado. And our mission is to educate, adjust, and transform as many people as we effectively can in our lifetime and beyond. Of course, any small business owner wants to leave a legacy, and that's one of our goals that we've set for the future. But as far as what we do for work, we are in the realm of chiropractic, which many people immediately would think is an exact opposite of something like maybe the practice of medicine. And in some ways, there are similarities, some ways there's differences, but the chief aim of the chiropractor is to optimize a person's brain, spinal cord, and nerve system. And we do that by way of adjusting the spine, which over time, because of all the stresses and strains we face within a given day, week, month, quarter, year, decade, all those stresses add up, misalign the spine as part of defense physiology, which we can go more into, and as a result, start to bother the body's control system, which is your nervous system. So the chief aim is to optimize the function of that control system, remove interference to the body, because your body knows how to heal itself and how to be well. It just needs no interference. So that's what I'm all about, is optimizing the human being, not treating symptoms and disease and pain, but just getting a specific system of the body working as well as it possibly can in every single person that walks through our doors.
I love that. Yeah, I think that is amazing. And this is an industry that I would say most people have a basic under, like most people think they know what chiropractors do. And so I kind of want to dive less into that aspect of it, because, you know, every town has its tons of chiropractors. But I would love to talk more just kind of about where did this thing come from and what are some of the misconceptions? And I would love for our listeners to, I guess, be able to make a better informed decision on whether or not chiropractic work is good for them, and then kind of dive into some of the business side of things for you. So where did this whole thing, like this whole world of chiropractic care, come from? And I'll give context. We were talking before the interview. I just heard a famous podcaster just yesterday, I believe, who was talking about like how I think that, let's see, he said that chiropractic care was invented in the 1800s, and then somehow the doctor who invented it died, and his son took it on and kind of used it as a practice that had no scientific backing to then kind of manipulate people and stuff. I know that story is not true, but it's a story people hear out there. So inform us of where did this whole thing called chiropractic care come from?
Okay, so the gentleman in some ways is correct. However, there is a fabric of untruths within this story. But of course, you know, now that we're in the information age and we have access to the internet and just millions and millions and millions of pages, and more importantly, millions of opinions, not facts, people right. can be misled and swayed. And it's like that telephone game where as the story goes along, especially across the internet, it gets misconstrued and all the truth and facts get stripped from it over time and gets diluted. So here right. we go.
And if people have a big platform, then we assume that platform.
Oh yes,
credibility.
Absolutely. So, chiropractic starts at the end of the 19th century. Okay, so we're in 1895, the same exact year that Wilhelm Röntgen discovered the X-ray, okay. as it would be. But 1895 in Davenport, Iowa. In a building called the Ryan Building, which was just like we have today, is a building that had several practitioners as part of it, as tenants paying rent to whomever the owner of the Ryan Building was. And D.D. Palmer, who originally was born in Ontario, Canada, and had made his way down to the States with his family, D.D. Palmer is in the Ryan Building practicing magnetic healing, which was a more popular healing art at this time. You almost never see it now because it's died out. Right. Unlike chiropractic, which has stood the test of time, that ought to tell us something. But magnetic healing has died out over time. D.D. Palmer was a very astute human being, very well-read, studying the body always, anatomy, neurology, physiology, and as a result, had quite the magnetic healing practice, and he practiced in the top floor of this Ryan Building. Now, in the Ryan Building, there was a janitor who was tasked with cleaning the halls, cleaning out all the trash cans, cleaning all the offices of the tenants. This gentleman's name was Harvey Lillard. And Harvey Lillard and D.D. Palmer got to talking one night as the janitor was making his rounds. And Harvey Lillard had been deaf for some years now. And D.D. Palmer had asked him about how this was happening and how this whole communication process took place. I don't know. It apparently was not full on deafness, may have been deafness in one ear, but he had a very, very hard time hearing mm-hmm. and was almost completely deaf. And D.D. Palmer, as he learned more about this guy, someone had told him that, yeah, when Harvey was stooping over, he was in a stooped position, as it says, and he felt something give way in his spine years ago. And ever since that point, he had been almost totally and completely deaf.
Interesting.
Well, D.D. Palmer reasoned that if that stooped position produced deafness, then maybe if he could go and assess his spine, because they kept talking about the guy's spine, something was involved with the spine at the same time the guy went deaf, maybe he could assess his spine and find a way to reduce whatever happened in the spine to help the deafness. And so it took about 10 minutes of convincing of this guy, because the guy's probably thinking, what, you're gonna lay me down on this crude wooden table thing, and you're gonna push on my back? And you know, so he had to do some convincing. And 10 minutes later, he's got the guy on the table. He makes one adjustment in the upper back of this guy, and within minutes the guy starts to hear better. And so he's thinking, man, you know, I'm going to come back tomorrow. The guy gets worked on a couple times and his hearing is fully restored.
Wow.
And a year later down the road, the gentleman, Harvey Lillard, the janitor, leaves Dee Dee Palmer a testimonial that says, my hearing remains good. And that was over a year ago. So Dee Dee Palmer's sitting here thinking that he's literally discovered some kind of weird cure for deafness. And he delves further into the spine, into the nerves, how the nerves come out and emanate from the spine, go to serve every other tissue in the body, and thinks, man, you know, people are in stooped positions all the time. They're stressed. They're working their bodies. Maybe the spine is coming offline and somehow irritating the nerves. And so Dee Dee Palmer starts hiring people to help research, and he founds a school, and his clinic grows. He becomes the first chiropractor. Of course, he founds chiropractic. And then you fast forward 125 years later, Davenport, Iowa is still what's called the fountainhead of chiropractic. The Palmer School of Chiropractic still reigns supreme, is still there to this day. And of course, Dee Dee Palmer's son, BJ Palmer, is credited with taking chiropractic to the masses. So Dee Dee Palmer is dubbed the founder of chiropractic. His son, BJ, is referred to as the developer of chiropractic. BJ Palmer was a man completely and totally ahead of his time. He had a research clinic. He had chiropractic ambulances out on the streets. Can you imagine a clinic having a chiropractic ambulance? People were too sick or unwell to even get out of bed. He would send a chiropractic ambulance from the Palmer Research Clinic to go pick these people up, to rush them to the clinic to be assessed and adjusted, and these people were getting well. And he also, I might add, established the first FM radio station west of the Mississippi River, period. And one of his employees happened to be Ronald Reagan. I mean, there is a rich and deep... One of the employees at his radio station was Ronald Reagan.
That's amazing.
When Reagan was young. Wow. It's incredible. And so his main goal was to get chiropractic out to the masses and share the message. Then all the research came as technologies come along, different MRI, PET scans, all these fancy technology innovations come along. We're able to further and further probe into the realm of the adjustment and what it's actually doing to the anatomy and physiology and neurology. And with each year that goes by, there is more and more research every single year coming at us at an ever faster pace because of all the technology we have now to be able to measure the effects on the body when you adjust a human being.
That's amazing. So, I also have heard over the years, and again, this is like stuff that you hear that you're like, I don't know if it's true. You know, I guess the statistics where we say, you know, they told me that they say this. It's like, well, who is they? And it's like, I don't know. Some conglomerate of internet voices and statistics that I saw. But I also heard that in the early 1900s, that the term quack, like medical quack and kind of like crazy, came from a calculated press campaign from the American Medical Association to actually discredit chiropractors. And that for, I mean, many decades until just recently, that a lot of that thinking that was passed down pretty intentionally to kind of look at chiropractic work as crazy, really has still prevailed until just recently when there started to be some breakthroughs. Is that true?
Or have you heard of that? As far as how the term came about, is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Or I guess more so like, was there some pretty intentional, like press methods by the AMA?
These are great, great questions, Seth. I've been on many podcasts and I love the angle you're taking on this because like you said, many people, when I'm on different shows, They want to know just the general things. We never probe into the history of some of this stuff, which is so, so important. So yes, early 1900s, I can't say with 100% certainty if they coined the term quack and essentially or in specifically wanted to aim that at chiropractors, but I would not be surprised if that were true. However, throughout the past century and then some, the word quack has been used with acupuncturists, with chiropractors, with any kind of other occult type healing things. But I would say it's been directed the most at the chiropractic profession. In fact, in the early 1900s and even into the middle of that century, chiropractors were actually being jailed for, quote, practicing medicine without a license. See, the AMA, the American Medical Association, and this is all in congressional documents because they had a huge court case, Supreme Court case with this that people can get online and Google this and they'll find these documents. It's called Wilk, W-I-L-K,
okay,
versus AMA. Wilk versus AMA. Dr. Chester Wilk launched this case that the AMA was unfairly launching a campaign and attack against chiropractors, probably like what you're describing. And I believe in 1949, this thing made it to like the Supreme Court, all these doctors involved, and chiropractic, of course, prevailed. The Supreme Court judge ruled in favor of the chiropractors being unfairly treated. I mean, the AMA had all these campaigns, marketing campaigns, advertising things out against chiropractors. And why would they do that? Well, because so many people were getting well.
Right.
That's like a threat to them.
Yeah, it's money.
In fact,
they want people to stay in the hospitals and keep coming back.
And I will say, now, fast forward, you know, 100 years into the future, I actually get referrals from medical doctors quite often. So in the medical community, they want to see all the research. And like I alluded to, that we have so many things now, that there's so many devices that we can measure these things. And then if we're able to communicate it effectively to a medical professional, they totally get it. Every time I've done that and communicated it with the terms that they're familiar with, they go, my gosh, that makes perfect sense.
Right.
I'll send you all my spine people and they'll admit it. All I can do is I can give pain pills, needle injections, or surgery, or they can refer out sometimes for physical therapists, which people are starting to use less because they can get on the dang internet, go to YouTube, and have a whole PT regimen of stretches and workouts right there on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of patients going, my gosh, I went to the PT, spent all this money, and I found the same thing on YouTube, you know? And I can follow along there. And I love physical therapy and I love the practice of medicine. Everybody has their place. But right. I think what was happening back in the past was that they were starting to get worried that we were going to like take all the patients because people were healing without the use of drugs or surgery. And so someone's taken away your business, you're going to try and launch some kind of campaign. However, the way they were going about it was not morally and ethically, what you might say, sound.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I think we're starting to see it more in like even toys and phones and like things we use every day where people are just creating things that don't last intentionally so that we have to replace things because these huge industries that run things, they don't like the idea of you being able to buy something once that lasts for 20 years.
Exactly.
And so they, you know, create crappy parts and stuff. And I think there's a lot of industries like that.
There is indeed. In fact, you even watch the show Shark Tank and these people bring these ideas to the sharks. And I don't watch the show, but I happened to catch this one time. And this guy had this brilliant presentation, but the only problem was like, it doesn't break. People don't need another one. They'll right. have one for their whole life. So no one wants to invest in anything like that.
Right.
It's a one and done thing. So you're hitting the nail right on the head, man.
Yeah. And it's just so interesting once we think about our bodies in that way of realizing like, wait a second, it's actually not good long-term for our health to be, you know, to be putting ourselves in a position where we're just so dependent on medical care. And so I think that's why a lot of people are starting to realize that preventative healthcare, there's a lot going for it, and it actually increases our quality of life a lot more. And yeah, it's interesting. The other question that I want to ask is, so people think that we like the typical one is, okay, you get in a car accident and then you go to the chiropractor.
Yep.
Or like you have, you know, a crick in your neck, and so you go to the chiropractor and stuff. It's still like, I still feel like people look at chiropractic care, mostly as, I guess, like
only for trauma.
Yeah. Only for trauma, or only, you know, kind of a cause and effect situation, not preventative. Like it would be really hard for you to convince somebody to go to the chiropractor every week for 6 months so that they get sick in the future less. Talk to me a little bit about that, about like looking at healthcare as more preventative when it's like hardwired in our brain to initially assume everything's good until I get hurt and then I'll go get fixed.
So let's use an analogy here.
Great.
Because people understand that line of thinking in a different context. So just using the chiropractor in trauma, that's, you know, if people want to do that, that's 1% of the use of chiropractic. And probably the reason that 90% of the people brush their teeth every day and go to the dentist regularly, but only 10% of the people will get adjusted regularly and take care of their spine, a lot of that is on the chiropractic profession, because historically there's been a couple greats that have really got after it education wise, but there needs to be more chiropractors getting out in the community and educating and teaching more on this. That's another subject. However, to answer your question more accurately, so if someone's going to seek the counsel of a chiropractor only in a trauma, so I was in a car crash, it snowed the other day and I slipped and fell, or I was shoveling my driveway and something, quote, popped in my lower back and now I can't move. That's one use of chiropractic, but that would essentially be like, I'm only going to go to the dentist when my tooth is a 10 out of 10 pain killing me, and I'm not going to go otherwise. I'm only going to go when I need a root canal and they got to like just tear in everything and throw everything at it and do surgery. That would be like, I'm only going to go to the mechanic when my engine totally explodes and blows up, when my transmission totally and completely fails, versus going in for regular checkups, getting my oil changed, going in, having them do the brake fluid test. Hey, you need your brake fluid is bad. We need to replace that. Otherwise, your brakes can go, your transmission can fail. Okay, we'll put some of that stuff in there. This is exactly what chiropractors are offering to the public. But rather than an engine blowing up, or rather than needing a root canal, we're talking about your spine deteriorating, disintegrating, irritating, and destroying nerve tissue, and completely punching a serious hole in your health. Because the spine and the nerves are irreplaceable. Anybody out there listening right now, have you ever heard of a spine replacement or a spine transplant or a spinal cord transplant? They do not exist. So like the old Volvo ad used to say, replacement parts are hard to find. And they have this poster of all these human bones in the spine. Old Volvo ad that I saw the other day. Your spine, your nerves, your spinal cord, precious material. You only get one set. Why would you not want to maintain that? You have to maintain that just like you have to have the people come mow your lawn every week, just right. Like you have to go to the barber every 3 weeks or every month, just right. Like you have to clip your fingernails. And I think it's a visual thing as well. People can't see their spine like they can see their teeth, see their fingernails, see their hair or their beard or things getting out of control. But the laws of the universe, they're immutable. So the universe is about entropy and breakdown and disorder and chaos. If things are just left to, you know, their own pursuits, or things are just left alone, or we're just going to wing it, they'll always disorganize, deteriorate, dysfunction over time. Mm-hmm. So your spine is subject to the same laws of entropy, just like your teeth are, just like your fingernails are. If you buy a new car and you let it sit outside, it will not get cleaner and shinier. It will get rust. If you buy a plot of land, corn will not magically spring up. Weeds will magically spring up, because that's the law of entropy.
Right.
Any physicist listening to this right now is probably shaking their head like, yes, that makes total sense. The challenge is finding a way to communicate that to the lay public so they get it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's the huge challenge. And there's a million more questions I could ask about chiropractic care because I think it's fascinating. But my encouragement to listeners would be to recognize that it's a science-backed industry. And also I think it's helpful to recognize when you've been mismarketed to, and to recognize when people have intentionally tried to get you to believe something different. And so I just think people should do their homework. And they don't often, they just take what they believe. That being said, how long have you and your wife had your practice?
So we have been in practice as of April 2020, when that rolls around, it'll be 5 years.
Okay. So did you just open up your practice and then the doors were, you know, people were flying through the doors and you had a successful practice day one? Or tell us a little bit about what that process looked like of opening a chiropractic office in a town that already has chiropractors. And you didn't live here before, am I right?
Correct. We moved to Fort Collins knowing zero people.
Okay. So talk me through a little bit about actually getting the business up and running and the business to a now thriving, successful practice.
Yeah. So we're under the idea and the belief that we didn't just want to be quote good at something, because the marketplace only rewards excellence. So we have this common thread of excellence running through everything we do, doing things of high quality. And also we are serious planners. So we like to have foresight with everything we're doing. So before the doors even open, we wanted to know, I mean, we took over this space that was a concrete box. My wife, Jessica, drew out dozens, if not over 100 floor plans on one of those grid sheet papers, looked at them, threw them away, looked at it, throw it away. That won't work. We had everything planned out, every room, everywhere the door is going to swing. How are the patients going to flow through all of this? We had to get all that mapped out first, all the colors, carpet, doors, door frame colors, front desk design, all that stuff. Okay, so we get all that ready. Then you have to have all your systems in play because you're going to get what you expect. So number one, we were expecting excellence of this clinic and of ourselves, most importantly. And so we expected we're going to be busy within 2 to 3 months, knowing zero people, we're going to be cranking in here. So we wanted all the rooms perfect, the floor plan laid out perfectly, and all the systems nailed. So we got all our systems in play. We practiced, we role played, we ran through, we got the software down that we're going to have to use on the computer. Many late nights getting that stuff figured out. Just like a McDonald's will never open until everyone is fully trained and fully ready, so that on day one of McDonald's opening, if the whole entire high school track team walks in on day one, three high school kids that are running the McDonald's can handle them, no problem. We wanted to be exactly like that. Systems in play, floor plan laid out. We got all that set. Then from there, it's about getting out of obscurity. It's about figuring, it's about how many people know the three W's about you: who you are, where you are, and what you do. So if that means meetups, if that means networking meetings, if that means jumping on social media and trying to leverage that, if that means getting on the radio, I mean, anything and everything we could to just meet human beings, we were going to do it. If that means going to Starbucks and buying $200 worth of $5 gift cards and just handing them out to the first 20 to 50 people that walk through the door that day, not because I want them as patients, but just because you want to put good energy out there and plant some seeds, then we would do that. Basically, any event where we could get out and expose ourselves and our brand to the public, to our community, that's where we started.
Yeah, which is great. And that's how I met you originally. I think I met you at a meetup group at the downtown artery. And then I think quickly after we were into each other at church and got to know each other better. But
yes. I might add, see, a lot of people would listen to what I just said and go, oh, you know, that's what everybody says. Just go out and meet people. But here's the key thing that really made that effective for me is I would go to these things and I would go with fire burning in my eyes, in my soul, with full on 100% passion for what I was doing and full on authenticity to truly want to provide value for people, to provide more use value than what they would pay me, and you might say cash value. And I was going into every meeting, every networking event, every anything that had to do with growing our office, I was going in full bore, 100% focused and on fire for chiropractic. Right. And when you're on fire for what you're doing, people are going to want to come around you to get warm.
Yeah. And it's, and I mean, I've seen that in you and your wife, and it's true that people are, you know, they go out and they network and they shake hands and they meet people.
Yes.
Fire. You know, they're kind of assuming like, okay, if I do the right things, if I go and meet enough people, then my business will grow. But they forget, like, you have to bring, like, yeah, there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of businesses out there. You have to, like, bring the passion that you have and be transparent about that. And you guys do that so well.
One of the feedbacks that I got early in practice, when I knew, like, man, this place is going to be a super success, is I started noticing people would come in and, you know, oh, okay, my back's a little tight. And we talked about, like, we're not just about back pain and neck pain stuff, but you have to meet people where they're at. By the time we got around to going over their x-ray, and maybe their x-ray didn't even look too bad, but it got around to the point where I would actually spend a couple minutes educating them on the other 99% of what chiropractic can do, not the 1% that treats pain and symptoms, the other 99%. And I started to notice people stopping me, and they're almost kind of like chuckling. And I'm like, what is it? And they're like, you really love what you do, don't you? And I go, yes, I do. And I believe in it wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. And people would just want to be under care just because of that. People come in and say, you know, I feel better just being around your guys' staff. Like, this is the only time I've smiled today. This is the only time, like, I learned something that I was like, wow, that's really cool. Or the one time that I've just felt really, really good today. So thank you guys for creating that type of environment and atmosphere, mm-hmm, and for just being authentic. Because like you said, which you put beautifully, there's a lot of people just going through the motions out there that think if I just go and show up, I'm going to go up. Well, showing up has a potential to help you go up, but you got to show up with fire and with a little bit of energy so that people want to be around you. People are not going to gravitate toward others that are like in a lower negative vibration. They want to be around the people that are like, man, like what's going on in his or her life? Like, my gosh, they're on fire. They're on point. Like, I want to learn more about them.
Right. You know? Yeah, absolutely. So has it just been all uphill since you guys have started? And I'm not necessarily talking about customer growth or revenue or whatnot, but what, talk to us about what some of the kind of specific challenges have been for, especially, I mean, you and your wife are unique because you're both doctors. Mm-hmm. You've really been doing this together. It's not, you know, it's an atypical situation. I think the few times I've been in the practice, like, I've seen your daughter there, like, it's a family thing. So it's been something you guys have gone through together. Fill our listeners in on what one or two of the big challenges have been for you.
Sure. So any small business owners probably face this. Anyone wanting to go into small business needs to be very much aware of this. One of the tricky things these days is hiring a staff that is as inspired as you are, which is almost impossible. But hiring has been, I don't want to say a challenge, because we've had so many great CAs, but there's so much out there now online, Indeed.com, headhunters. There's all these people that are always trying to, you know, lure people away from one place into another. And the newer generations of people coming into the workforce, they're comfortable like jumping ship, you know, like every couple months even. It's amazing some of the resumes we see where there's been so many jobs where people are just shifting and moving, and people are not staying in the same career for decades on end now. And so one of the tricky things is finding three or four people we can bring on staff that will really mesh with our mission and our vision and our core values, and really being, you know, super inspired every day to show up. And believe it or not, we can find those people, but it's more difficult of a search than people would imagine. And I mean, you'll see things today where people think that it's totally and completely fine to set an early morning interview meeting and then just not show up. No call, no email, no nothing. People may think it's okay to just quit a job over the lunch hour via text. It's just like, hey, something came up, I'm done. Oh, well, we have 60 patients on the schedule for this afternoon. So, you know, the patients are my patients, but they're also the staff's patients too. So it's like, who's going to see your patients? You know, you got to check them in, you got to check them out, you got to get them on the tables. And so that's been a challenge because, you know, also Colorado's not, the living expenses here are not like living in Arkansas or Missouri or something like that. Right. So there's that component too.
What have you done to kind of help mitigate that or to help improve that, I guess, like level of ownership and buy-in over the years so that your people feel more committed?
So number one, before I get to that, is we hire slowly, fire quickly, because another thing with small business owners is they're too scared. They develop this kind of family type relationship with the staff, which, like, we're very close knit in our office for sure. But they'll see something happen, they'll sit down, they'll have an evaluation with the person. It happens again, another evaluation. They'll give people 10, 15, 20 chances. And I've been guilty of this in the past, and I've had to learn. You have to hire slowly, fire quickly. If you think you have a problem with a staff person and you've given them however many warnings, you can't even count anymore. If you think you have a problem, you have a problem, and you have to assess that and you have to deal with that efficiently. Otherwise it starts to draw your business down because you have a weak link in there. And with the hiring process, it's really tempting to go, oh, they were pretty good. Let's just get them on. Let's get them going. And I've learned from that as well. You've got to take your time, and you've got to really ask yourself, like, could this person have been like one of the founders of this place? Like, did I really sense that they'd be inspired to work here, or would they just be showing up to a job? And then once you find those people that can see that coming to this job is actually not only going to be fun or exciting or busy or whatever they're looking for, but it's also going to help fulfill their personal values. You know, maybe they highly value wellness and fitness, or highly value communication. And so they're going to thrive in this position because they're going to be talking wellness. They're going to be communicating with a lot of people. When you can build those connections, people will fit into that role better. They'll stay longer. But I think of the quote by Richard Branson that says, train your people so well that they can leave you, but treat them so well that they don't want to. We try to follow that philosophy as closely as we can.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's some great advice for listeners that, I mean, any small business is going to face some of those same challenges. Where do you see, what's the future look like? Yes, for One Health, but also for you and Jessica. I know you guys have always had big plans to not just have a, you know, a chiropractic office that has a consistent enough group of people coming in that pays the bill. So, like, what's the future look like?
Yes, I'm very much a person that my life's mission, I want to serve as many people as I can, period. Then you have to look at, like, what my mission is and what kind of service I want to bring to people. Right. We love teaching. I love being on podcasts like this. I love interacting with other intelligent people like yourself that are trying to make a difference in the world. I'm super inspired by that. And I love being a doctor. I love getting people well naturally, connecting the brain and the body so the person can express health at a fuller level and achieve their dreams, their goals, be more productive, and get after the things in their life that inspire them. The future that I see for our office, you know, we're about to hit our 5-year mark. There's been talks of expanding into one of the surrounding towns and having a second office, bringing in an associate doctor to help manage patients. that's a whole nother talk for a different time, because how do you scale a chiropractic business when people get such a close connection and rapport with a doctor that's putting their hands on people? It's not like it's not like expanding a coffee shop, you know, whether I'm making the coffee or you're making the coffee, if there's a system, it's going to taste the same and it's going to be the same everywhere. So who cares, you know, who's serving it. But with chiropractic, with massage, with personal training, there's such a rapport building component that it's tough and it's a risk to scale something, because I've had people that have asked and then they would say, you know, if it was any other doctor in here, I don't think I'd come as much as I do, or if I would come at all. I love chiropractic, but I love the atmosphere and I love you guys, and it'd be really tough to keep coming as frequently as I do. Mm-hmm. And that's a real serious thing. However, it can be done. Nothing's impossible. So there's talks of expanding maybe into one other clinic. It's been said that every chiropractor has got about one startup in them in their entire life, because it is so much, you know, moving parts and challenges and things you have to go through. But again, you got to take risks if you want the reward.
Right.
Everyone wants to make a million, but no one wants to spend 100,000. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to make a billion. No one wants to spend a million. You know, everyone wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. So there's that part of it, of taking the risk and just going for it. And I love that. I love the thrill of that, but it has to be calculated and foresighted and planned out. Another thing, doctor is from a Latin root that means teacher. It's from the Latin root docere, which means to teach. And it's funny that it worked out that way, because everyone always told me, you should be a teacher. You should be a teacher someday, like a professor or a high school teacher. Like, you're really good at teaching stuff. Well, I'm very inspired by success and goal achievement and just elevating a person, not only in the area of physical health, but mental health, vocational health, financial health. I love studying. I love reading. I was doing that a couple hours before we had this call just this morning. That's what kind of razzes me, jazzes me, gets me going in the morning. I love that kind of stuff. I love sharing what I know, what I've read, the knowledge I have, in a clear, concise, original format to help people, not just health-wise in their physical body, but in all areas of life. So, you know, developing some sort of system, business, adjunct to our clinic that addresses other areas of life. I see that on the horizon within the next 3 to 5 years as well.
Cool. Yeah, I do as well. And I know that in conversations we've had over the years that I feel like sometimes we have these passions, but we need to like figure out the right model around it. We need to figure out what, like, okay, I know I have a passion to do this in a professional setting or in a business setting, but figuring out the logistics around, okay, what's the right business model and stuff. So, in the future, I'm confident we'll have you back on the podcast to tell the story of whatever that turns into and stuff. But, I really appreciate you coming in today. And I have two last questions. One, you mentioned reading, and I always like to ask our guests, who is, I guess, where do you find like inspiration from? Like, are there a few like resources or tools that you feel like have just been instrumental in your personal development?
So for all the techies out there, I want to share this, because this was actually given to me from a billionaire who is an avid researcher, very obviously very successful individual, and also loves reading, loves success, loves staying up on current events, but also personal development. There is an app called Flipboard, F-L-I-P, board, Flipboard. It's an app where you can custom design areas that you're interested in. Maybe it's success, maybe it's politics, maybe it's theology, maybe it's beer making and brewing. You can look up all these hashtags, and this thing will actually put together a newspaper specifically for you. And of course it's digital, and you just flip through this thing, scroll through this thing, and I'll bring you the most relevant articles from those areas of interest from around the world, from different sources. So that is something that I love to scroll through. If I'm going to be on my phone, I want to be productive, not just busy. I want to be productive, furthering my mission, furthering the things that I love, and furthering my knowledge and things that really truly matter to me. So that's been an invaluable resource.
That's cool.
However, different books. I'm kind of like a polymath in training. I love reading everything from chiropractic philosophy to quantum physics to a success or personal development book. I think people can't go wrong with books like The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles, How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Richest Man in Babylon, As a Man Thinketh, and on and on and on, Think and Grow Rich. These things are staples. So if the books I just mentioned, if people have not dug into those and repeatedly read those, that's like square one. Mm-hmm. And then branching out, no matter what your interests are, those books right there will lead you straight in life in general. Then you can start branching out. I don't read too much of like the quote general newspaper. I find there's more negativity and conflict and violence and things that I don't want to fill my mind with necessarily. It's good to know what's going on in the world, but I try not to let that dominate my mind, because I only have so much mental willpower and energy for the day.
Yeah, you got to use it well.
Yep. But those who read are those who lead, and the more you learn, the more you earn. So always be doing your mental exercises. If you go to the gym to lift for your muscles, you got to be putting your mind into the works of the greats. Always go back to the pioneers and founders of things. If you really, really want to delve into the people that initiated these amazing ologies and sciences, go back and read the founders, because those are the people that were the true visionaries. And if you want to be inspired, always go back, figure out who the founder or the father of whatever you're trying to read about was, and study that person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you for that. And before we go, what would your advice be to our listeners who are business owners, entrepreneurs, people who are aspiring starters?
Give yourself permission to do something extraordinary in the world. And there's really like a six word map for success. Think things through, then follow through. Make sure you don't have to have everything planned out to a T. You don't have to know everything. There's always going to be uncertainties. There's always going to be fear. That's part of it. But think things through, foresight, plan out a little bit. Most people plan their next vacation more than they plan their life. Give yourself permission to spend some time on you on a weekly basis, even if it's half an hour. And if you're going to get into business, you don't want to look back someday with regret and go, man, I wish I would have done that. I just read a thing the other day. This nurse was with people at the end of their life, hundreds, if not thousands of people. And she wrote a book on the top five regrets of the dying. And the number one regret of the dying, when they're on their deathbed, they say, I wish I would have lived a life that was true to me and not what others expected of me. So keep that in the back of your head, because you don't want to be another statistic like these people in this book. And I'll leave you with this. Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous, an amazing business owner? Well, really, actually, who are you not to be? Yeah. Your playing small does not serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, just like children do. Hmm. We're born to make manifest the glory of God that's within us, is another way of to put it. And it's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. You inspire others.
Yeah.
And as we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. That's the mission here on earth, is to become so inspired to go for it, to give yourself a chance so that you can start a fire in somebody else and change that person's life.
Well, I know that I am leaving this recording inspired, and I hope that our listeners in whatever path of life, whatever place they are leaving inspired in the same way. And so, Brandon, thank you so much for not just for being you and, you know, the passionate person you are, but being willing to share and being willing to share your story and share what you guys are doing with others. So thank you so much for being on today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Seth. And thank you for having me. Very grateful.
Yeah, absolutely. We will put the link to One Health Chiropractic in the show notes of this episode so people can get in touch with you if they'd like. Is there any other way that you prefer for people to get in touch with you or to stay in touch with what you're doing other than your website that you want to mention?
We're very active on social media. You can find us on there, One Health Voco. We're on Facebook and Instagram quite heavily. So if you want to learn more about what we do, we're on there. OneHealthChiro.com is our website. And reach out to us, email us, message us, call us. Always here to help.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Seth.
Yep. This podcast was produced by Storyon Media and Marketing, and our passion is helping small businesses use stories to grow their business, and we create a community that helps you do just that. So if you don't have the budget to hire a big agency, but you really want to learn how to navigate online marketing, how to tell better stories, and really how to build a brand that lasts, then our program, Success with Stories Elite, is for you. Every single week, we give you new trainings, content ideas, and content blueprints to make marketing with stories easy. To join our community, head over to www.successwithstories.com/elite, or just click on the link in our show notes. Again, that's successwithstories.com/elite. Have an awesome day, and let us know what you loved about this episode by leaving a review on iTunes or your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you so much. My name is Seth Silvers, and I will see you next time.